Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Tonight, our 40-minute speaker is Jackie from Long Beach.
You can keep them. I don't need them. I just need them to read. Hi, everyone. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Jackie.
Hi, Jackie.
Good to be here and to be sober tonight. I want to say thanks to Kathleen for inviting me down. I appreciate being invited. I can tell you when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, the only invitations I got usually were of the nature of legal ease. They usually were sent by the clerk of the county court and asking me to appear or telling me that I hadn't appeared or doing all that kind of stuff. So I appreciate being invited down. Thanks for welcoming me. Dave was out front. It was very accommodating and welcoming when we got here. We're used to my home group. We get there. If the meeting starts at 7:30, we're all usually there by 6:30. We're just early arrivers, and so that's kind of the way I am. So I got here a little bit early and also didn't want to get stuck in traffic. So anyway, grateful to be here and grateful to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to tell you that my sobriety date's December 17th, 1984. My home group is the Bellflower Big Book Group. We meet five nights a week. I go to the Monday night meeting in Bellflower, and I've been going there since for a few years now. I got sober in the East Coast in Florida and started going there after a couple of years of being here, and grateful that that's my home group. It's an awesome group. I hope that you, if you have a home group, I hope that you feel that same way about your home group. I'm there every Monday night, and when I'm not there, somebody's going to call and find out why I'm not there. And I'm grateful for that because I need to be accountable. I have a sponsor in that group that I'm accountable to and current with, although there's one little thing that I haven't shared with him yet. I was reminded about that from my friend Tim. Tim and I are AA brothers. And so we were talking about something that I fessed up to him a couple of weeks ago. And I said, oh, yeah, I haven't told Johnny yet. And he goes, oh, really? And I said, I'm going to tell him. I'm not going to keep it a secret. I'm the kind of alcoholic that I know that I can't keep secrets. One little thing, and I'm starting to lie and cheat and steal again. And before you know it, I'm drunk before I even know what happened to me. And I want to tell you that the life I have today in Alcoholics Anonymous is the best life that I've ever known. And if you're new here tonight and you don't know what that means, if you'll stay around long enough to get in the middle of our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and do the things that we're asked to do around here, I will guarantee you that your life will change whether you want it to or not. And what happened for me is I started doing some things that I thought were really stupid around here, and I thought had absolutely nothing to do with my problem. See, my problem, I thought, was drinking. And I wasn't drinking any longer, so I was thinking that things were supposed to get better really fast. And for me, they weren't. And I'll tell you a little bit about that as I go along. The directions in the book tell me I'm supposed to tell you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. And I qualify that because a lot of times you'll hear people say what it was like. It wasn't really that bad, really, if you want to know the truth about it. I still had a home. I was driving a car. It smelled like puke, but I still had a car. The roof was kind of coming down, and it had a few dents in it because of the way I was driving and the things that I was doing while I was out there. But it really wasn't that bad. I was a couple of seconds from getting fired from my job. I'd been to jail a few times, so what's a couple of nights in jail? No big deal. And that's kind of the way it was. But inside, I was crazy, and I was dying, and I didn't even know it. I want to also tell you that my problem is not a problem of circumstance. When I got here to Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't have been able to tell you that, that's for sure. It was my family. It was my job. It was this. It was that. It was the other thing. It was nothing to do with the fact that I was drinking alcohol. And I'm an alcoholic because there's two things that happen for a guy like me. And if you're here tonight, if it's your first meeting or your 100th meeting or you're just coming back again, there's a distinction between an alcoholic and a problem drinker. And I'm an alcoholic, and I know that today because there's something that happens for me around drinking. The first thing is I have this allergy that our book talks about. And if I never take a drink, the allergy doesn't happen. I had a cup of coffee earlier, and I'm not allergic to coffee because I'm not right now thinking about how I can get out of here and get another cup of coffee, ditch my friend Tim to get more coffee, to have more coffee. But that's not what happens for me when I take a drink of alcohol, just one drink. And if that in and of itself were all that was wrong with me, problem done. I'm not drinking. I'd be home tonight, probably sitting on the couch with a remote control in my hand, having a nice dinner, playing with the dog, and not being here, because I wouldn't need to be here. But the other problem that happens for an alcoholic of my type is I have this thing broken in my brain. And what happens for me is I forget that when I got out, that I got out of jail at 7 o'clock this morning, and the night before I had been humiliated, I had been doing things with people that I shouldn't have been doing them with, in places that a guy like me shouldn't be doing them with, and I forget that. And my brain tells me at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, after I've been doing all that stuff, that it's going to be different this time. And so I convince myself, because my brain is broken, that it's going to be okay this time. And if you're an alcoholic of our type, you know exactly what that feels like. If you're a problem drinker, you stop drinking and life is good. I hear it all the time in Alcoholics Anonymous. I stopped drinking, started coming to AA, wasn't doing anything. Life started getting really good. I got the job back, the boyfriend, the girlfriend. I'm driving a $300,000 car, blah, 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 blah. And their life is good. And that's not my experience, and that's not what happens for a guy like me. What happens for me without Alcoholics Anonymous, and when I say Alcoholics Anonymous, I mean the fellowship Alcoholics Anonymous, but I also mean the program Alcoholics Anonymous. There's two different things. And it took me a long time here in Alcoholics Anonymous to find that out, that there's a fellowship. Couldn't live without it. I love the fellowship. I'm a part of it. I'm in it all the time. I try to do as much as I can in the fellowship. But there's this other thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. It's our program. It's our steps. It's our traditions. It's the directions that I found in the textbook Alcoholics Anonymous to help me live my life. Because, see, I thought drinking was my problem and I'd stop drinking. The book tells me that drinking is just a symptom and that I have to get down to causes and conditions. Well, I didn't want to get down to causes and conditions because you guys were the cause and the condition. Why would I need to do anything? And so that's kind of a little bit about what that feels like. And the other direction in the book, it says that each person in their own story will tell you how they form their own relationship with a power greater than themselves. And if you're new here tonight and that doesn't sound like really good news, that's okay. Don't let that chase you out of here. Because if God or higher power or any of those other things that we use to talk about it here in Alcoholics Anonymous scare you, eventually, if you're an alcoholic of our type, booze will chase you back here. And that's exactly what happened to me. This is not my first time around Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'll tell you a little bit about that. I'm an alcoholic, and I believe that I'm an alcoholic because I drink too much. And my first drink was a blackout. I was about 9 or 10 years old. I grew up in the South. I grew up in Florida. I come from a small family: mom, dad, older sister, and my father was in the military. We moved around a lot, and he decided he wanted to settle in Florida. His parents lived not far from us, and so I grew up around alcohol. There was alcohol in the house. My father used to keep I used the term at work the other day, ice box. I guess that sort of dates me because my assistant said, "What are you talking about? It's a refrigerator." It's an old term for a refrigerator, but it was an ice box. And what my father really called it was a beer box. And that's exactly what it was. It was in the garage and it was full of beer. My father was in the Navy and we moved around a lot. And so my first drink looked like this. My friend Roger and I decided that we were going to camp out in a tent in the backyard, and so we pitched the tent. It was summertime, probably. I can't really remember. I wasn't writing all this stuff down when I was out there doing any of this stuff, so it's all about my memory, and sometimes my memory's not the greatest. But this is the way I remember it, and so we decided we were going to camp out in the backyard. Pitched the tent, and the first thing that we did was we went down to the local 7-Eleven, and we stole a bottle of wine. Now, I'm going to use the term wine loosely, because it was Mad Dog 2020. And if you've ever had that stuff, it doesn't really taste like wine. It tastes like battery acid, if you want to know the truth about it. And it had the effect that I guess I wanted. And what happened for me that night was I started drinking, and I don't remember much. I drank too much, and I blacked out. And I woke up the next morning. It was probably 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning, and I told you I grew up in Florida. It was already starting to get hot. It was probably, I don't know, 100, maybe 110 in the shade. It was humid, because that's what happens in Florida. It's humid. And I had puked everywhere, and my friend Roger wasn't in the tent, and I had, like, thrown up all over myself. I had puke in my hair. And I'll apologize ahead of time if you guys are squeamish and we don't talk about puke and bodily fluids here in South County. But that's kind of my experience. And I don't want to ever forget that that's the kind of guy I am, because sometimes my little brain today at 28 years sober still looks at a drink and says, oh, you know, that looks kind of nice. And then I think it all the way through and I remember what it did to me. And so that morning I woke up, I puked all over the place. I'd probably peed myself. And I go to open up the tent. I had gotten covered with ant bites. And what happens when you throw up in the wilderness or out in the yard where there's ants around, you're a food source. And so I became a food source. And I had these, my legs were covered in ant bites. And I open up the tent, and there's the neighborhood. Mom, Dad, Roger's parents, the next-door neighbors, everybody was waiting for me to make my grand entrance. And it wasn't the next day or the day after that or the day after that that I slid myself into Skid Row or went to my first reform school or anything like that or went to jail for the first time. None of that stuff. But that's kind of the way drinking was for me from then on. I drink for the effect produced by alcohol. I used to think I drank because I liked it. I used to think I liked the taste of it. And I found out I didn't. I drank for the effect. I drank because as soon as I took that drink, whatever was going on in my head, all the fear, all the anxiety, all that stuff went away. And it worked just about every time until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hear people all the time say alcohol had stopped working. And alcohol never stopped working. Alcohol did exactly for me every time that I took a drink that it was supposed to. And so I just kind of went on that pattern. Every opportunity I had, I got drunk. And I told you that my parents had that beer box out in the garage. And so I would steal booze. Right away I was lying, I was stealing, and I was cheating to get what I needed and what I wanted. And I didn't know that. I just thought I was doing what every 10 or 11 year old did. And I hear people say that they had their first drink when they were like 21 or 22. And I couldn't wait that long. I really couldn't wait that long. I was this little kid. I was wound up. I was always in trouble. I was always being, you know, what is wrong with you? I wish I could have explained that to somebody, what was wrong with me, because I didn't know. And so alcohol worked for a really long time. I hated people. I'm a loser at heart. I don't have these great big goals and aspirations. I didn't grow up in this family where my, you know, parents are pushing me to do all this stuff. At one point in time, I thought I wanted to be a pilot. I'm not mathematically inclined, so that was out. And I was drinking and using really early, and so that was already gone. All that that was gone. I was going to make that my priority from then until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so throughout high school, I kept doing what I was doing. I'd drink too much. I'd black out. I'd embarrass myself. I'd embarrass my family. I'd embarrass my friends. The other thing that happens for a guy like me, once I take one drink is all it takes, all bets are off. I don't care about you. I don't care about my commitments. I don't care about where I'm supposed to be, what I was supposed to do. Alcohol takes precedence over everything in my life. And I didn't know that. I really didn't know that. I just thought I was out there having a good time and trying to have fun. And when I was about 17 years old, I was supposed to go meet my sister for her, I think it was her 21st birthday or something like that. And this is what that night looked like. I was supposed to go meet her and her friends. I can't even remember where. And I ran into a buddy of mine who worked at the local 7-Eleven. And so I stopped by and said hello and told him what I was going to do. And he said, hey, we're all going to so-and-so. How about if we go out tonight? And I thought, what a great idea. And so I'll just go out with every fiber of my being. I really thought this is what this was going to look like, that I was going to go out with my friends, have a couple of cocktails, and go and meet my sister. And here's what happened. I drank. I set up that allergy that I didn't even know I had until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a line in the book, in the doctor's opinion, where he says it explains many things for which I could not otherwise account. And it cleared up a lot for me when I started reading the book, that all of a sudden I got why I would go out with that exact thought. I'm just going to have some fun with my friends. And then I'd end up in other places, in other states, in other cities, and doing things that I wasn't supposed to be doing. And so what happened that night is I started drinking. I was drinking way too much. The last recollection I have, I had a bottle of tequila in my mouth. My buddy and I were out in a parking lot, and that's all I remember. And I woke up the next morning about 6:30, and I was laying on a gurney. And I don't know about you, I'm not a rocket scientist, but I know when my eyes open and I'm looking at fluorescent lights and I'm laying on a gurney and I can't feel any clothes around me, something's wrong. I can put two and two together. This does not feel right. This does not feel good. And so I looked over. There was a cop standing next to my bed. And that was also not a good sign. Wasn't the first time I'd woken up and there was cops next to me, but that was the first of many. And I looked over and the cop realized that I'd opened my eyes, and I said, "What happened?" And he told me that I was in a car accident the night before. And what happened was I blacked out and I started driving home. And I ran a red light and slammed into a 1972 Lincoln Continental. And I don't know if you've ever seen a 1972 Lincoln Continental, but it looks kind of like the mothership. And I drove this little two-door hatchback Plymouth Arrow. And it wasn't pretty. And what happened for me that night was I had come about that close to not enabling that guy to get out of his car. My car caught fire. He was able to get out of his car, and he saved my life that night. And I ended up in the hospital and didn't even faze me at all. I got discharged from the hospital that morning. That was back in the early 80s. Drinking and driving was not as bad as it is today. And so I kind of got a slap on the hand. And I remember the release sheet from the hospital said intoxicated on it, and I hid it. I stuffed it away in my hospital gown because I didn't have any clothes on. They had cut all my clothes off because they had to. And the other part about that, and the reason I tell that story, is some of us have stories of this pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And if that in and of itself would have gotten us sober, I would have gotten here that day. I would have realized something was wrong with what I was doing, and I probably would have stopped, and I probably would have gotten some help. But that in and of itself did not stop my path of destruction. And so I was working for McDonald's. I worked for the local McDonald's, not knocking McDonald's. It was a great job. Worked there for a long time. Didn't have anybody to call. Sister wasn't answering the phone. Mom was out of town. My friends were really kind of at this point in time already starting to get done with me. And so I called Cheyenne, who was the restaurant manager at the store that I worked at, and told her what had happened. And she came down and got me. And I tell you that story because I'm the guy, I don't care about you. I don't care about what I have to put you through. I don't care what you're going to endure to help me. I'm going to take. And so she came down and got me that morning, and I had my white socks on. I had my hospital gown with no back on it because I had no clothes on. And the only place that I could go was she took me down to the local McDonald's, and I sat down in the booth in the back of this McDonald's. My arm was in a sling because I'd been beat. We didn't wear seatbelts back in those days, and my face married the steering wheel, and I was covered with, I was a mess. I was a mess. And so I just sat there in that McDonald's, and I drank coffee, and I waited till someone was able to come and get me. And that wasn't the last of it. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in December of 1982. I'll tell you what that story looked like. I went out on a Thursday night. My friends were going down to the local bar that we used to hang out in on Thursday nights. It was 25-cent cocktails. You can't say no to 25-cent cocktails. I mean, I can't. I couldn't then. I knew Monday night was 25-cent drinks. Tuesday night was 10 cents. Wednesday night, beer bus. Thursday night, 25-cent cocktails. They don't do that stuff anymore, so don't get all excited out there if you're thinking about going back out and trying it again. And so we went out on a Thursday night just to have a little fun. And I was supposed to be at work on Friday night. I went out. I started drinking. I was just going to have a couple of drinks with my friends. I started drinking. The next thing I knew, I woke up. I came out of a blackout, and I was on a plane. I don't know how that happened. I was in Atlanta, Georgia. I was apparently on my way to New York City. Now, I told you I lived in Orlando, Florida. I really don't know how that happened. I have this fuzzy recollection of this fight with my. I was living with my mom. I really don't know what happened. And so I ended up getting to New York City. I have some relatives there. I got back. My boss at the time had said that he wanted to talk to me. And so I got the plan together. If you're like me, you're a good planner, you're a good thinker. I had it all planned. I'm going to go to Jim and I'm going to tell him I'm going to stop drinking. So I go to the store that day, and Jim wanted to talk to me, and he goes, "That's a great idea, but we want you to go to Alcoholics Anonymous." And I was 19 years old. I didn't know what the heck Alcoholics Anonymous was. I had never heard of AA in my whole entire life. And it didn't sound like good news, that's for sure. I didn't grow up in this family that I grew up in waiting to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so what I had to do was go to one meeting a week. I went to a meeting every Thursday night, which is where I was supposed to be. And after the meeting was over, I went to the bar that I used to drink in. I didn't drink. And I didn't get a sponsor, didn't do any steps, didn't get involved. You guys said hello to me, and I ran the other way. And I remember this guy, Brian, he's a really dear friend of mine today. I remember him saying that he had been sober for 6 months. And I remember thinking to myself in the back of my head, you've got to be kidding me. That is the stupidest thing ever. Why would anybody want to stop drinking for 6 months? Because I never had any intention of stopping drinking. Now, I had a lot of intentions of not going to jail. I didn't want to puke on myself. I didn't want to wet the bed. I didn't want to, you know, pee in the car. I didn't want to leave you in a city that I didn't mean to leave you in. There's a whole lot of things I didn't mean to do, but I did anyway. And so I was like, this is dumb. And so every week went to the meeting, after the meeting went to the bar, after about 90 days of no steps, no sponsor, no step one. I didn't admit to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. One of the meetings that I went to one time, I did accidentally end up in one more meeting only because I'd met some friends and I started hanging out with them. I really didn't want to because I didn't want to catch what you guys had. But I remember John convinced me to go to a meeting, and we were sitting in this noon meeting in Winter Park, Florida, and they were going around the room. It was a really big room, and everybody introduced themselves and said, "Hi, I'm Joe, and I'm an alcoholic." "Hi, Joe, blah." You know, and so I came around the meeting, and John was sitting next to me, and then I said, "My name's Jackie." And of course, I want to fit in. I don't want to look like the odd man out. I don't want you guys to know that I'm not really an alcoholic. I'm just here because of a series of bad breaks and misunderstandings. And I said, "My name's Jackie, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm an alcoholic." And I, like, my lips started quivering, and I could feel the tears getting ready to come up. And my friend John looked at me and goes, "Doesn't that feel good?" Shit, no, it doesn't feel good. It does not. It's not the truth. And so after about 90 days of not drinking and doing all that stuff, I drank again. I was at the bar one night. Bartender said, "What do you have?" I said, "I'll have a rum and Coke." And I was off to the races again. I stopped drinking rum because, you know, when you drink too much rum, you can smell it. I started drinking vodka. You can't smell vodka. Did you know that? I don't think they're talking to us when they say that. I think that they're not talking to people like you and I, if you're one of us, that are going to drink a gallon of vodka and show up to work the next day. And that's the kind of drunk I am. I'm a gallon of vodka drinker, and I'm going to, you know, hit it hard. And so for the next several years, you can just put a rubber stamp on that. I was living at home with my mom, no goals, no aspirations. I quit everything I ever start. I never finish anything. I had a thought that I wanted to go to college. It wasn't in the cards for me. I was a quitter. I wasn't going to do any of that stuff. And drinking was the most important thing for me. And so what ended up happening, I'll tell you about the last probably 6 months of my drinking, and here's what it looked like. I'd go home. I worked at McDonald's. I was a restaurant manager. I'd get off work. By this time, I'm just about a daily drinker. I'm keeping a bottle in my car because I can't make it home. I can't make it to the next liquor store. I can't make it anywhere. I need it in the car. And I would think to myself at work that day, I'm just going to go home. I'm going to go home. I'm going to be a good son. I'm going to, you know, hang out with mom. I'm going to have some dinner, turn in early, and I'm going to get up early tomorrow, and I'm going to, you know, start all over again. And I really believed that. And about, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes before work was about to end, that little thought would go off in my head. And it would say, just one for the road, one on the way home. It'll be fine. I'll get home and I'll do all that stuff that I told you guys I was going to do. And I'd get a big soda before I left work. And in the parking lot, I'd pour half of it out because you can't have all that. I don't want to spill anything in the car just in case I were to get stopped or anything like that. And I want to also tell you, by this time, I've been stopped 3 or 4 times. I didn't go back to jail. I went to jail once. I hadn't gotten arrested in a while because I don't think the cops really, at that point in time, really had a they didn't really like picking up people and taking them to jail that had peed all over themselves and were covered in throw up, which was usually the way I looked. And so I hadn't been arrested in a while. And so I'd pick up that bottle out of the back seat. I'd shoved it underneath the seat of the car and I'd, you know, pour that drink. And by the time I got halfway home, it was gone. And I needed another one. And then I'd stop and get another bottle and I'd start the cycle over again. By the time I got home, I was drunk. I was going to probably fight with Mom because she was, at this point in time, tired of my shenanigans. And I was still thinking that it was her fault. If my parents, by this point in time, they're divorced, if they'd have been better parents, if I, you know, the whole list of things that are wrong with us when we get here that I know today are not what's wrong with me. My family did the best that they could. And my mom is the best mom that I could have ever had. And I'll tell you a little bit about that in a minute. So the last 6 months, that's what my drinking looked like. I'd get home after we'd fight a little bit. She'd probably go to bed. I slept on a pull-out couch in the living room. I'd pull out the couch. I'd pass out. I'd wet the bed at some point in time. I'd get up in the morning, try to hide it. I don't know if you've ever tried to hide the fact that you peed all over the living room floor. It's kind of hard. And there's a big wet spot, and it smells like urine. And that's just the way it goes. And so in October of 1984, I got arrested again. And Mom was kind of done with me. And I didn't stop drinking. And a few, maybe about 6 weeks later, I was going out one more time. And she said to me, she looked at me as I was going out, and she says, if you go out one more time and get thrown in jail, I'm not going to come get you. Those were the words that were coming out of her mouth, but in the back of my head, I thought, you're going to come get me. Wah, 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 you know, the Charlie Brown voice. And so, sure enough, I go out Sunday night. Sunday night was my favorite night of the week. There weren't any drink specials, but we just drank, like, starting at, like, 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, I know some of you probably start at noon, but what would happen to me if I started at noon, all bets were off, and I was going to miss all the fun and excitement that I was going to have later on that night, passing out somewhere in the bar. Anyway, so, so that's what drinking looked like those last, you know, few months. And I went out that night, and sure enough, I was driving home on a Sunday night about 2 o'clock in the morning. I couldn't see. I'm not proud of that, but that's kind of the guy I am. I remember one time I was in a car full of people, and a friend of mine looked in, you know, you ever get those looks from people really clearly? And my friend Bill looked at me, and we were talking about my drinking and driving. Now, I never considered not driving. Because I never considered not drinking, so I don't know, I didn't put all that stuff together. And so my friend Bill looked in the mirror, and I got him in the eye. You know, when you get somebody in the eye, it's really scary. And he goes, well, why don't you just not drive? And I was like, that's an interesting thought. That was like asking somebody not to breathe, really. I mean, because it didn't ever occur to me not to do those things. And so I got arrested one more time, picked up the phone. Back in the 80s, before cell phones, when you dial a phone and they've unplugged the phone, it just rings and rings and rings and rings and rings. And that's what happened that night. And I was pissed off. Mom didn't come get me. And I want to tell you that every AA birthday that I've had from that day till today, on my birthday, I call her. I call her a lot anyway, but I call her and make sure that I thank her for unplugging the phone that night. Because I don't know that I would have gotten sober had she not done that. She was loving me to death, really, is what she was doing. She got the principles of Al-Anon without ever going to an Al-Anon meeting, and I thank God for that because it saved my butt. And what happened is I got out of jail, and I don't know what happened over the next couple of weeks. I was trying to figure out how I could kill myself. I didn't have a really good plan because I'm a chicken. So I didn't kill myself because I'm standing here tonight. And so I was driving home from work one night, and I kept thinking about how I could slam my car into really fast. And then all of a sudden, the next thought came to me, and the thought was this: you can go back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And in Bill's story in our textbook, he talks about that white light experience that he had. And I'm not going to sit here tonight and tell you that that was my white light experience, but I can tell you that was that moment. Our sponsor talked about this. Tim and I share the same sponsor. He talked about that on Tuesday night. We have a sponsorship meeting once a month where we all get together, and we started reading the book. And this month, we normally read the 12 and 12, but this we started reading the book again. And he was talking about that couple of seconds worth of what I think are grace. And I don't know why that day was any different than any other. I had not woken up in jail that morning. I was not sleeping next to a stranger that day. I had not been 8 hours late for work that morning. None of those things that had always been the things that I had done had happened to me that morning. But for some reason, the thought came to me that I could come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'd like to tell you that I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I walked in the door. I saw the steps hanging on the wall. I grabbed a hold of what you guys had to offer, and I was off to the races, and life has been beautiful ever since. That's not the case. It's just not what happened for me. And what I have is my experience. Right, wrong, or indifferent, it's just the way I've done this. I won't recommend it. I wouldn't recommend it to the people I sponsor today. I don't recommend that they take my path, but my path is my path. And so what happened for me is I started on the Don't Drink and Go to Meetings program. If you're an alcoholic of my type, that's not the answer to your problem. And it took me a long time to get that. And what it took for me was being this close to getting drunk again. And I didn't even know it. I didn't even know it that I was that close to getting loaded again. And I was kind of visiting alcohol. I was visiting your meetings. I still didn't have a sponsor. I wasn't working any steps. I wasn't doing the deal. And so what happened for me is I was sober 2 years, got my license back, started getting back to meetings on a regular basis, and I found a sponsor. Started a half-hearted attempt to work the steps. And I say half-hearted because I got up to 6 and 7 and that was it. And the steps are outlined the way they are for a real reason, and I need to do all of them. You guys may not have to do them, but if you're an alcoholic of our variety and you try the half measure, it's not going to work. The book says half measures avail us nothing. It doesn't say half measures avail us half results. It says nothing. I didn't get that. And so I got a sponsor, started working some of the steps. He got loaded. I got another sponsor. She was all over the place, traveling all the time, never saw her, you know, all that stuff. And what ended up happening was some friends of mine were going to this big book study on the other side of town. Now, I couldn't have thought about a worse thing for me to do than go to a book study. Why would I want to do that? That is just dumb. But what happened is I started going over to that book study. And it was a little meeting in a room about like this. There was a table in the front. There were three guys that sat at that table every week. And one of them, his name was Curtis McTurner, and I'm allowed to use his last name. He's going to the big meeting in the sky today. And I will be forever grateful for that man in my life. He saved my butt. And this guy was about 18 years sober. He was about 55 years old. He and I had absolutely nothing in common. A lot of it, as I look back on it, and I think even then, he kind of reminded me of my father. And I had a huge resentment against my father, and I'll tell you a little bit about that when I talk about my 8th and 9th step. And I went to that meeting, and I saw something. There was something different. You guys were probably talking about steps and sponsors and home groups and commitments and all that stuff, but I wasn't hearing it. What I saw that night was Alcoholics Anonymous. This man was on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous. He was busy in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I mean in the fellowship, and he was busy in the book. He was busy in the textbook, Alcoholics Anonymous. And the next week at the meeting, that little voice inside said, you need to ask that man to sponsor you or you're going to get drunk. And so the next week after the meeting, I went up to Curtis after the meeting and I said, Curtis, I'm about 4.5 years sober and I'm just as crazy as I could ever be. Will you help me? And you know, the thing that I learned that night, and I've learned it many, many, many times since, is that when we're willing and we're ready to take some action, people in Alcoholics Anonymous will move mountains to help you. If you're willing to do some of the work, we're willing to meet you halfway and then some. And in my head, I was thinking, there's no way. This guy's not going to want to take on my case. I'm too different. I'm too whatever. I had a whole list of, you know, my case is different. I'm a my case is different kind of guy. And when my case is different, I separate myself from you guys. And so today I'm an alcoholic. That's all I am. I'm an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic into anything else. I'm an alcoholic. And so what happened is we started working the steps. And we were reading the book, and he was talking about doing an inventory. And I was like, okay. Started writing an inventory like it's laid out in the book. And I did it because I was tired of fighting, and I was tired of arguing, and I was tired of mostly in my head. And so I did what the man asked me to do. And I was taking a long time doing this inventory. And on one of the Monday nights, I went up to him after the meeting and I said, "Hey, Curtis, when are you going to be ready to listen to my fifth step?" I didn't really want to take the fifth step, if you want to know the truth about it, but I knew that I needed to do something. And he goes, "Well, how about tomorrow?" I was like, "How about not?" No, that's what my head said. But you guys, I've learned after that that it's not about my thoughts and my feelings, it's about my actions. And so my mouth said, absolutely. And so the next day, I drove over to his house. He lived in a double-wide mobile home on the other side of town. And we sat there and chain-smoked cigarettes and drank coffee, and I read him my fifth step. And I hear you guys all the time say that you came to Alcoholics Anonymous and you felt like you were at home. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I still felt like I didn't belong here. Like, my case was different and you don't understand, and yeah, but. And what happened for me that morning was I got in Alcoholics Anonymous and I felt like I was a part of. I told that man things that I was never going to tell anybody else. I told him about the resentments I had. I told him about the behavior that I had done that I was going to take to my grave that you weren't going to know about. I'm not going to share that with you tonight, because that's in the beginning of the meeting. I said we share in a general way. So if you're waiting for a fifth step, I'm not going to take that. That's for my sponsor. And so I told him all those things that I was never going to tell anybody. Nobody was going to know those things. And I got free. And I remember I went home. I did it exactly what he said. I, you know, took the book down. I read 6 and 7. Next morning I woke up and all of a sudden I got this big weight on my shoulder, like, oh my God, you know, I'm full of fear, I'm angry about something. And I thought, I have screwed up royally. And I called Curtis and I said, "Curtis, I've done something wrong. I feel bad." You know, he goes, "No, you don't." He goes, "You're supposed to." Because that's what happens here. In the 10th step, it says, we continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. The next word that's in the book says when. It doesn't say if, possibly, maybe. It says when. It's going to happen. So if you're new here tonight and you're looking for perfection, we don't get that here. We read it all the time in How It Works, progress rather than perfection. But I didn't get that. I didn't think that you guys were talking about me. I thought you were talking about yourselves. But I learned that night. And so I've been trying to do the deal ever since. And what I started to do is exactly what Curtis did. Curtis went to a lot of meetings. I started going to a lot of meetings. I carried a big book with me to meetings. People thought we were dorky back then for doing it, but when somebody needed a book, I had a book with me. "Oh, you don't have a book? Here's mine. You can have mine. Take this." Started, you know, I started sponsoring guys. I started going through the book exactly like he did with me. I was going to a meeting on Thursday night where they brought a Navy treatment center over in the van, and I got just a wonderful opportunity to work with those guys on a regular basis. I went to the base and I sat with those guys and I read the book with them and I took them through the steps and I started to give back what had been so freely given to me. There's a line in the book, and I've been a student of the book for a long time, and I want to tell you that there's never a moment where you're not going to learn something here. And Tuesday night in our book study, Johnny read one of the words and I had missed it for a long time. And in the doctor's opinion, the doctor writes about Bill calling him and asking him for the privilege of going and talking to somebody at the hospital. And that's what I feel about my role in Alcoholics Anonymous. It is, and I hear people say that all the time, but all of a sudden that night, the dots connected for me. It's a privilege for me to be able to share what has been so freely given to me by somebody who didn't know me, who didn't have a vested interest in anything other than to be helpful. And so I've been trying to do that. And so I'd work with those guys. A good friend of mine, my old boss, who actually brought me to AA, got sober. He'd been sober 20 years and died before I moved out here. And I was really crushed by that. And he was a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He was busy. He would spend his days off at the jail. I don't know anybody except people like us that take their days off and go down to the local jail and hang out all day and are happy to do it. And that was Jim. He was this just light in this world. And that's the kind of thing that I grew up doing. I had a home group and commitments in that group. I started going to the jail on a regular basis. I remember the first time I went into that jail and the door slammed behind me. I just thought I was going to shit myself, if you'll just pardon my French. I'd never really been cognizant when the door slammed before, you know. And I went in there and I took a meeting into the jail. And I don't know if any of those guys were getting anything that I was given, but I was getting something out of it. Every day that I walked away from that meeting, I was a little bit freer. And I know that that happens for me today. And our book tells us that this is a progressive illness, and it's a spiritual malady. And it's contingent on what I have today. It's contingent on the growth and maintenance of a spiritual condition that I have to keep working on every day. It's not about what I did yesterday or who I worked with a year ago or whatever. It's about the guys that I sponsor today, the willingness that I have, and the actions that I'm willing to take today. Driving 30 miles to San Clemente wasn't really top on the list of my things to do on a Friday afternoon. But I remember one night when I was out there drinking, I was driving a 1968 Volkswagen. The brakes were about gone. The windshield wipers didn't work very well because that wasn't really a priority. We had a hurricane coming, so there was a torrential downpour. And I was driving 30 miles to the bar that I used to drink in. And I don't want to ever forget that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me the ability to be able to do that. And so whether it's 30 miles or 150 miles or whatever, I'm happy to do whatever Alcoholics Anonymous asks me to do. My AA brother Larry talks about this all the time, that my job today is to serve you. And when I'm thinking about how I can serve you instead of what I can get, my life is really good. When I was about 12 years sober, a really good friend of mine passed away. It wasn't sudden. We knew he was sick, but I thought he's never going to be one of the ones that dies. And I tell this story because when I talk about that at the beginning, when I said each person in their own way, I'll share a little bit about how they found their own relationship with a power greater than themselves. What I found from our book, the book says, and I talk about the book all the time. If you're offended by that, I'm sorry. But I tell you, that thing is the textbook. It's the way, it's the directions. It's the best thing that's ever happened to a guy like me. And inside the book, it says deep down inside every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. And it may be blocked by pomp, by calamity, by worship of other things, but in some form or other, it's there. And what I had to do was work the steps and clear away all that crap. And I did that through the process of taking those steps. But my friend Bill got sick. He had a room for rent, and I moved in with him, and I was living in one part of the house, and he was living in the other. He got sick, and they came, and they took him to the hospital one Saturday morning. And I just thought it was going to be no big deal. He's going to be good the next day or the day after, and you know, life would be, you know, on again. And what happened was the next day on Sunday, I called my friend Brian. We were going to go have a bite to eat and then go visit Bill in the hospital. And my friend Brian said that he was in a coma, and so that I probably needed to go down there and see him. So I skipped dinner and I went down to the hospital to see Bill. And I got there at 5:30 on Sunday afternoon. His mom and sister were there, and they were in the room. And I went inside his room, and he didn't know I was there. And he had been sober a little bit longer than I had, but we were good friends. If you don't have a buddy in AA, find one. Find somebody to hang out with, somebody that knows who you are and knows when to call you on your crap. You can go do things with, listens to you when you're whining and crying and your sponsor's not going to. Find those people, because we can do this and I can't. And so I'd been there about 10 minutes, and Bill took his last breath. And I'm not equipped to handle that kind of stuff. I'm a runner. I'm a drinker. I drink at every opportunity. I'm just not equipped to handle that kind of stuff. And I stayed there for a little bit with his mom and his sister. And I left. I went and hooked up with my friend Brian, and we went out to dinner. And we were all really close. We were good friends. And over the next couple of days, I was dealing with grief, and I'm not good at that. I'm not good at dealing with my own feelings sometimes. And I had been in a new job, and on Tuesday of that week, one of the servers that worked for me, I worked in a different restaurant by this point in time, and one of the servers that worked for me said, "Hey, I really need to talk to you. It's really important." And I was busy. I had a lot of things going on, and so I said, "Yeah, I'll try to make time." So the next day on Wednesday morning, I was driving to work, and that was the day of Bill's memorial. And I was crying on the way to work, and I remember Bill saying that when he died, he didn't want us all weeping and wailing. And I just thought that was pretty funny, and so I decided that I was going to weep and wail anyway, because I didn't give a shit. And so I was driving to work that morning, and I said to this God that I came to know through working the steps and being around you guys, I said, God, I need help. I can't do this. Will you help me? Will you help me? And I got to work, and Kirk said, I really need to talk to you. Can we make some time? And I said, sure. So about 2 o'clock that afternoon, we went out back, and something was weird about the way Kirk was looking at me. And he goes, do you know somebody who wears a lot of yellow? And I said, I really don't know why I'm telling you this story. He didn't know me. We never really met. I was new to this location. He didn't know who I was. And he goes, I told him the story about my buddy Bill dying, because that's what it is. He goes, he's been with you since Sunday. And he came to tell you that he's experiencing an incredible amount of joy in his life. And that he passed through pretty quickly, and that he is, and he's okay. And I knew that was sort of the answer to my prayer that morning, because my friend Bill used that word joy all the time. His mother had sent him a card one time, a birthday card, and it said inside, joy is the infallible presence of God. And I knew that that was sort of the answer to my prayer. It didn't make the next day or that afternoon or anything like that great like that. But I knew one more time that God was with me, and that what I couldn't do, God was going to help me do. And so over the next several months, we just got through that. I got another sponsor, worked with Lee for several years. He started traveling a lot. I was going back to school. I was working my way through school, going to college, going to work every day, doing the deal, going to meetings, sponsoring guys, being sponsored, just in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was an awesome time. I have such a great foundation. The home group that I was in, we were busy. It's my home group today because it's exactly like the group that I got sober in. We're busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. We're always doing stuff. This weekend we've got a gratitude breakfast. We've got a potluck at the end of the month. And if you're new and you don't care about any of that crap, or you think potlucks are stupid or anything that like that, just try it. Just get in the middle with us, and you'll start to enjoy those kinds of things. And I love doing that kind of stuff. We're always doing things outside of our meetings, and we're busy in our meetings as well. When you come to our meeting, there's probably about 50 people that are going to greet you. Don't be intimidated by that. It's really okay. We don't mean to be intimidated, but we want to make sure that you feel welcome when you come to our home group. And that's what home is all about. That really is what home is all about. I worked my way through college. When I graduated from college, my sponsor Lee was there. And I tell this story because he was really proud of me. I hadn't had anybody proud of me in a really long time. I'll back up real quick. I want to tell one amends story. I was working on those amends and doing what I was asked to do. And there was one particular amends that I was never going to make. It was on my list of no, never. And that was my father. And in Christmas of 1996, I got a card in the mail. And I hadn't seen or talked to my father for probably 10 years. We were like oil and water. If he said stop, I said go. When I was growing up, I stayed grounded most of my life because I was always doing the opposite of what he asked me to do. And that's just the way I was. And so I got this card in the mail, and it, Christmas card, blah, blah, blah. And then on the side of it, it said, love, Dad. Now, my father had never sent me a Christmas card as long as I could remember. And so the first thing I did, any adult male would do, is they call their mom. That's what I did. I called mom. I said, hey, I got this Christmas card in the mail, and it says, love, Dad. It's odd. What do you think about it? So I took it over to mom, and she looked at it, and she goes, yeah, that's your dad's handwriting. And inside of it, there was a telephone number. And, of course, the next thing I did was call my sponsor, Curtis. What should I do? Oh, my God. You know, he goes, well, call the telephone number. That's why we have sponsors, really. It really is, because they have the simple answers. Pick up the phone, shut your mouth, work the steps, call that guy, make that amends. They're the ones with the really simple answers. And so I made the phone call, and I went up to where my father was living, and I cleaned up my side of the street. I didn't talk about anything that he had done. I didn't talk about that, what a butthole he had been, or the times that he beat me, or any of that stuff. I just was there to clean up my side of the street. And I'm not going to tell you that we became the best of friends, but what happened a year later is my father got sick and died. And I was able to be there when he died, and I was clear. I had no guilt, no shame, no remorse, no nothing, because I'd been able to clean up my side of the street. And I was so grateful that I had been willing to listen to a sponsor and follow their direction. And so worked my way through college. My sponsor, Lee, was there at my graduation. And he's standing over here. And I'm walking down there. I'm a cap and gown. I'm a quitter. I'm a loser. I'm going to give up on everything. I'm not going to continue to do anything. And that's the kind of guy I am. And so he's there. He's got this big smile on his face. And Lee's this big 6'6", 270-pound. He looked like Superman. That's really what we used to call him. We used to call him Superman. And he comes up and he gives me this great big old bear hug. And he kissed me on the cheek. And I just, and everybody in line was like, who's that? Like, it's your brother. He's just a really good friend of mine. And so he was just really proud of me. And that's what we get to do here. You know, we get to take actions and we get to do things that we don't even know we're going to affect other people. And for him, that was a testament of what happens here in Alcoholics Anonymous, that we can set our mind to do things and we can take some actions, even though we don't believe in them, and they're going to work. And that's what's happened to me inside Alcoholics Anonymous, and it happens to me outside of Alcoholics Anonymous as well, because that's what you guys have taught me to do. I went to grad school. I'm not telling you that because I'm smart and I want you guys to think I'm all that. But what I've done is I've applied what you guys have taught me here in Alcoholics Anonymous to my life out there. I show up. I get there early. I ask for help. I stay late when I needed to, and I do what's asked. And 2 years later, after I started, I finished. 20 months. There we go. I was walking again. I had another cap and gown. I had a little thing on the thing. My mother was there. It was a good deal. And it's all because of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not because I've got this great mind and I have all these aspirations and visions. But I've been able to do what's been asked of me here. I had this great idea that I wanted to live in California. Don't know where that came from. And I started doing the footwork in 2005. And by 2006, I was out here. I had a job in the company that I work for. I've been there 21 years. 21 years, 21 consecutive. No breaks in between, just like sobriety. It's just like no breaks in between. 21 years consecutive in doing the things that I've been asked to do. And you know what? They kind of like me every once in a while today. And every once in a while, I'm able to just show up and be of service and do the things that I'm asked to do. And so I moved out here and I got busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. For a while, I kind of got on the outskirts, got a little crazy, started behaving badly. Not going to tell you all about that, but I ended up, got another sponsor in the group that I was going to at the time. And again, one of my favorite speakers in AA, Norm Alpe, passed away many years ago, used to talk about seconds and inches, and that's what life is about. It's about seconds and inches. And my sobriety has been about seconds and inches, and I was just that close to being right back out there doing the things that I was doing, because I'm the kind of guy, I can't do the things that I used to do drinking, lying and not telling the truth and being dishonest with you guys and expect to live a happy, sober life. I just can't do that. You might be able to do that, but I can't do that. And so I got this sponsor, and he goes, well, are you looking for a sponsor, or do you want to be sponsored? And newcomer, there's a difference. Being sponsored means that you're willing to follow direction. The guys that I sponsor today, we don't debate things. I don't debate Johnny. If he asks me to do something, I do it. If I go to him and I have a problem and he gives me a suggestion, like keep your mouth shut, I try to keep my mouth shut. And that's what I do, because that's what you guys have taught me to do here. And so I got Chuck, and he was my sponsor, and a couple of years ago, he dropped dead. Got a call at work, and he just died suddenly. And 2 days later, Johnny was talking at our Saturday night meeting, and 2 more days later, he was my sponsor, because I need adult supervision. I need to see somebody on a regular basis. I need to be able to be honest with somebody on a regular basis, and I need to be in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't want to ever forget that. I'll say this last thing, and then I'll shut up, because we're nearing the end. Somebody told me I could probably talk till 10 or 10:30, but I won't do that. Just kidding. They didn't really tell me that. In our book, in Bill's story, there's a line that's my favorite line. I close with it every time. It says, my friend promised. And his friend he's talking about is Evie Thatcher, who's the one that brought Bill the message of recovery that you and I know today. My friend promised. There's a promise. When these things were done, and what he was talking about was the steps. He's not talking about don't drink no matter what. He's not talking about don't drink if your butt falls off. He's not talking about don't drink and go to meetings. He's talking about these things, which are the steps outlined in our program, in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous. My friend promised when these things were done that I would enter upon a relationship with a power greater than myself that would solve all my problems. And I can tell you that today I've entered into a way of living that has solved all my problems. And I'm grateful to be here. Thank you. Awesome.